Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. A shipment of 600,000 doses of vaccine has been delivered to authorities in Lebanon in an effort to control a fast-spreading outbreak of cholera, the first the country has seen in more than 30 years. The vaccines have been supplied by the International Coordination Group, with the World Health Organization, WHO, covering the costs. A vaccination campaign will begin on Saturday, which will target all refugees and host communities, even those as young as one-year-old babies. It aims to reach 70% of the target population. The hope is that 200,000 doses of the vaccine will be administered over the coming 3 weeks. Since the first case was confirmed more than a month ago, over 3,000 suspected and confirmed cases of cholera have been reported across the country, including 18 deaths. Children are most at risk from the deadly disease, with those under 14 making up more than 50% of cases. Unilateral sanctions against Syria are perpetuating and exacerbating the destruction and trauma suffered by its people, according to a UN-appointed independent human rights expert, calling on states who have imposed sanctions to lift them. Elena Duhan, the Special Rapporteur on Unilateral Coercive Measures and Human Rights, said that 90% of Syria's population is currently living below the poverty line, with limited access to the most basic of needs, such as food, water, electricity, shelter and healthcare. She said Thursday, with more than half of the vital infrastructure either completely destroyed or severely damaged, the imposition of unilateral sanctions on key economic sectors, including oil, gas, electricity, trade, construction and engineering, have quashed national income and undermine efforts towards economic recovery and reconstruction, adding that no reference to good objectives of unilateral sanctions justifies the violation of fundamental human rights. A team of independent human rights experts is preparing to travel to Iraq on Saturday to investigate forced disappearances in the country. The UN Committee on Enforced Disappearances will spend nearly 2 weeks in Iraq, meeting victims, civil society organizations, international organizations, and national and human rights institutions. Iraqi authorities agreed to the visit a year ago. They estimate that the number of people who have disappeared during decades of conflict and human rights abuses could be anywhere between 250,000 and more than a million. The three-member team will also hold discussions with government officials, including those in charge of investigating and preventing enforced disappearances, those who work to locate the missing, and those responsible for establishing and implementing related public policies. Nikki Chadwick, UN News.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
This is radio for the unbelieving.
And the unbelieving is the title of a new play about clergy who don't believe in God. We'll be speaking with the playwright Maren Gazzaniga
and Linda LaScola, whose research the play is based on.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The battle for control of the U.S. Congress hangs in the balance 2 days after midterm elections, when predictions of a red wave of Republican victories fail to materialize. Three undetermined races will determine whether Democrats or Republicans hold power in the Senate. In Arizona, incumbent Democratic Senator, astronaut Mark Kelly, has a significant lead over Republican Blake Masters, with nearly a third of ballots yet to be counted. In Nevada, Trump-supporting Republican Adam Laxalt is leading incumbent Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto by fewer than 20,000 votes. Most of the 20% of the ballots yet to be counted are mail-in votes from urban areas likely to favor Cortez Masto. In Georgia, newly reelected Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger announced plans for a December 6 runoff in Georgia's Senate race. Incumbent Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock received about 30,000 more votes than his Republican rival, the former football star Herschel Walker. But Warnock fell just shy of the 50% mark needed to avoid a runoff. In Wisconsin, Lieutenant Governor Democrat Mandela Barnes has conceded to incumbent Senator Ron Johnson in a closely fought and watched contest. Senator Johnson is a climate denier who's downplayed the January 6th Capitol riot just ahead of the insurrection. He and his staff tried to deliver lists of fake electors to Vice President Mike Pence. Here in New York, Congressmember Sean Patrick Maloney has conceded to Republican State Assembly member Mike Lawler in the race for the newly redrawn 17th Congressional District. Maloney served as chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, making it his responsibility to protect Democrats' majority in the House. We'll talk more about what happened in New York State after headlines. On Wednesday, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy declared his candidacy for Speaker of the House, even though Republicans significantly underperformed in the midterms and they have yet to clinch a House majority. McCarthy's main rival for House Speaker, Louisiana Congressmember Steve Scalise, said he would instead run to become Republican Majority Leader. More than 210 Republicans who denied the results of the 2020 election or cast doubt on Joe Biden's presidential victory won races for Congress, governor, secretary of state, or attorney general. One top election denier is Arizona gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake, who's refused to say if she would accept defeat at the polls. With 70% of votes counted, Democrat Katie Hobbs holds a razor-thin lead over Carrie Lake. In Michigan, where Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer easily won re-election Tuesday, Democrats have won back full control of the legislature for the first time since 1983. Democrats also won complete control of both legislative chambers and the governor's office in Maryland, Massachusetts, and Minnesota. Nebraska voters have approved a ballot measure to incrementally raise the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2026. In South Dakota, voters have approved a ballot measure to expand the state's Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act. The move to bring health insurance to an estimated 45,000 low-income people was opposed by South Dakota Republicans, including Governor Kristi Noem. On Wednesday, President Joe Biden called Election Day a good day for democracy. He also said he intends to announce early next year whether he'll run for a second term as president in 2024.
This is ultimately a family decision. I think everybody wants me to run, but we're going to have discussions about it. And I don't feel in any hurry one way or another to make that judgment. Today, tomorrow, whenever, no matter what my predecessor does.
Iran's parliament has voted overwhelmingly in favor of the death penalty for protesters arrested at anti-government demonstrations. The vote follows reports of widespread human rights abuses directed at an estimated 15,000 protesters held in Iranian jails. One female protester in her 20s told the BBC she witnessed physical and psychological torture, saying she could hear the sound of screams as prison guards beat young men in a cell next to hers. Massive protests erupted across Iran in September after the death of a 22-year-old Kurdish woman in police custody. Mahsa Amini had been arrested for allegedly wearing her hijab improperly. On Wednesday, one of Iran's best-known actors, Tarana Aladousti, posted an image of herself on social media without a hijab, in violation of Iranian law, which requires women to cover their hair. She held a sign reading, "Woman, Life, Freedom," in Kurdish. Russian military leaders say they've ordered troops to withdraw from the city of Kherson, the lone regional capital seized by Russia after its invasion in February. On Wednesday, state media broadcast a televised briefing between Russia's defense minister and commander of Russian forces in Ukraine, Sergei Surovikin.
Having comprehensively assessed the situation, I propose we take up defensive positions along the left bank of the Dnipro River. I understand that this is a very difficult decision. At the same time, we will save, most importantly, the lives of our troops and the overall combat effectiveness of the troops.
The loss of Kherson would be the latest in a series of battlefield defeats for Russia as Ukrainian forces continue to claw back territory. But officials in Kyiv cautioned Russia could be trying to lure Ukrainian forces into a trap. In Moscow, Kremlin officials say Russia may withdraw from a Turkish and UN broker deal that's allowed for limited exports of fertilizers and grain from Ukraine's Black Sea ports. On Wednesday, a foreign ministry spokesperson suggested Russia may allow the deal to expire November 19th unless Western powers lift sanctions on Russian agricultural exports. Russia's faced international condemnation for exacerbating a global food crisis at a time when the UN warns a record 345 million people face acute food insecurity. Hurricane Nicole made landfall on Florida's east coast early this morning before weakening to a tropical storm. Nicole cut power to at least 82,000 homes and businesses and brought about coastal flooding, strong winds, and storm surges. It's only the fourth ever recorded November hurricane to hit the mainland United States. Global heating is creating far-reaching and worsening crises in every part of the United States, according to a draft of a major upcoming report by the National Climate Assessment. The report finds the U.S. has warmed 68% faster than Earth as a whole over the past half century. A drastic and urgent reduction in greenhouse gas emissions is the only way to slow down the climate-driven disasters from drought, excessive heat, and extreme weather events. The report also says the worst and climate catastrophe will drive more forced migration, create public health crises, and increase morbidity and mortality, and further threaten biodiversity. The authors note, if the world can reach zero or net zero emissions, warming will stop, curbing some of the worst effects of climate change. The U.S. would need to reduce emissions by over 6% every year to meet the Biden administration's goal of net zero by 2050. In news from the UN Climate Summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, the group Global Witness found the number of delegates linked to the fossil fuel industry is 25% higher than at last year's COP meeting. That's more than 600 people, higher than the combined number of delegates from the 10 countries most impacted by the climate crisis. On Wednesday, activists staged a number of protests at COP27. Youth activist Lucky Abang of the Pan-African Climate Justice Alliance demanded rich countries pay poor nations for loss and damage caused by climate disasters, like recent floods in Nigeria that killed more than 600 people while displacing over a million.
We want world leaders to take this agenda very serious because our future as young people is at stake. We contribute less than 4% to the global greenhouse gas emission, but yet the worst impact of climate change is upon us here in Africa.
British-Egyptian political prisoner Ali Abdel Fattah is now on the fifth straight day of a complete hunger and water strike as his family and supporters to continue to press for his release and proof that he's still alive. Earlier today, prison officers informed the family medical intervention was taken, though no further details about his condition are known. This is his mother, Professor Leila Sueth, speaking Wednesday from outside the jail where Ala has been held, about 60 miles north of Cairo.
Up until yesterday, I could have believed that he was fine, but he can't be all right after 4 days without any intake. He believes that if this ends in his death, the political price will be high for the regime, and he has already achieved that with the scandal that has happened.
And we have this report, a tweet from Ala's sister, Mona, who has said that, let's see if I can find it, a lawyer has been granted permission to visit Ala in prison, but she wrote, unbelievable, at the prison they are trying to prevent Khaled Ali from the visit. Meanwhile, a complaint has been filed against Ala's other sister, Sana Saif, accusing her of conspiring with foreign agencies and, quote, spreading false news. The case has not yet been accepted by the public prosecutor, but it puts Sana at risk of detention while she's in Egypt for COP27. She has already served more than 3 years in an Egyptian prison. In Britain, activists with Just Stop Oil brought parts of the nation's busiest highway to a standstill for a fourth straight day to demand the UK government stop all new oil and gas projects. Protesters climbed on highway sign overpasses, forcing police to shut down traffic. Dozens have been arrested this week, including youth activist Louise Harris.
Over 1,000 people in the UK died in just a few days because of the 40-degree heat, because of the climate crisis, which is fueled by oil, gas, coal, fossil fuels, and our government. They want more. It is an act of murder. And this is an act of self-defense. And we need you to join us in order for this to work, in order for our murderous government to take action and listen. How many more people in Pakistan, in Nigeria, have to die before they listen, even in the UK?
And elsewhere in the UK, police arrested a 23-year-old activist for pelting eggs at King Charles and Camilla during a visit to York to protest the destruction wrought by the British monarchy. None of the eggs hit the royal pair, and the young activist continued to protest as police restrained him on the ground.
You know what? I'm with the citizens above every person who stands against fascism worldwide. All of the victims of police brutality, all the victims of slavery and colonialism and imperialism. Every single person who's died, men, women and children, those eggs are the only justice that they're ever going to see for all of the people who've died so that that man can wear a crown.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio, radio for the rest of us. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And the rest of us are those of us who are not religious. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. This is the November 10th, 2022 episode of Free Thought Radio. Grant Blaschka with Audio for the Arts is our engineer in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Freethought Hall, the national offices of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
Freethought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, and we work to keep religion out of government and to educate the public, that's you, about the views of nonbelievers. We are the largest Freethought Association in North America with almost 40,000 members. So if you're not a member, help us get over that hurdle up to 40,000 and speak with much more influence, both in state legislators and Congress and educating the public. You can go to FFRF.org to ask for information or to join us.
And if you are a member, ask one of your friends to join us too. Today, we're going to talk about ministers and priests who no longer believe in God. That's the subject of a new play. The play is called The Unbelieving, which is running right now in Manhattan. It's playing off-Broadway. And we're going to speak with the playwright, Maren Gazzaniga, and with the researcher Linda LaScola, on whose interviews this powerful play is based.
And before that, we'll play the song Pack Up Your Sins and Go to the Devil in Hades. It was written 100 years ago in 1922. It was performed 100 years ago by the great American songwriter Irving Berlin, who, as regular listeners of this program know, was a non-believer.
Irving Berlin was a humanist and an agnostic. Speaking of composers, this week is the anniversary of the birth of Aaron Copland, the prolific American composer who also was a non-believer. He was raised Jewish, but he never believed any of or participated at all. Aaron Copland was born on November 14th, 1900. Listen for Copland's Threshing Machine, Prairie Journal, Circus Music, and the happy ending from The Red Pony during the breaks in today's show.
This week on FFRS Ask an Atheist, the timely topic was electioneering from the pulpit, and it was hosted by FFRF attorneys Liz Cavell and Chris Line.
And during the show, Liz and Chris outlined this important topic.
And to start us off, I wanted Chris to just describe what does electioneering means, where does that concept come from, and how does this issue arise at FFRF?
Yeah, so electioneering generally is any sort of promotion of different candidates, parties, being involved in politics. But what matters for us is when churches choose to get involved in politics. And as you know, the Johnson Amendment is a rule for nonprofits that says that nonprofits, which includes churches, cannot advocate for or against candidates for office. So they can't be trying to help certain candidates win. For the most part, can't even advocate for parties, because then you're going to be advocating for candidates by saying, oh, this party should win. You're really endorsing all those candidates.
And then they went on to give examples of churches violating the law, and they explained how you and how we can complain to the IRS about these violations. You can watch that Ask an Atheist on FFRF's YouTube channel by looking for the Ask an Atheist playlist.
And tune in next week, or I don't know if you call it tuning in, watching on Facebook Live Wednesdays Central, and then repeated at 7 p.m. on Facebook.
12 noon Central.
On our TV show this week, and that's called Free Thought Matters, we have an exciting guest that you'll want to watch. You won't want to miss actor, director, writer, and producer John Delancey. He's best known for portraying Q for decades in the Star Trek TV series, and it's been recently, he's back, there's new series going. Delancey has appeared in numerous other TV shows, including Breaking Bad, a very memorable role, which I remember even before I knew John Delancey, yeah. Torchwood and West Wing, to name just a few. His films include The Hand That Rocks the Cradle and The Onion Field.
John Delancey is a non-believer and a humanist. He's the winner of FFRF's debut Clarence Darrow Award, and he helped us unveil our statue to Clarence Darrow in Dayton, Tennessee, which was the home of the Scopes trial. During the Free Thought Matters show, I asked John Delancey if the humanistic philosophy of Gene Roddenberry, who was the creator of Star Trek, is still prominent in the current versions.
I just came back from Japan, where I had a very interesting talk with an ambassador for the U.S. State Department, who's a huge Star Trek fan, and she teaches the precepts of Star Trek as a way for inclusion, for collaboration, for leadership, and you know, all that type of stuff. So it has moved out. It's not just vertical. It has moved out horizontally into our culture, and a lot of people derive a lot from it, including humanism.
And we derive a lot from John Delancey. We should mention that he is an afterlife member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You can watch that episode of Free Thought Matters right now on the Free Thought Matters playlist on FFRF's YouTube channel.
And if you live in one of the 13 cities, major cities, where our TV show Free Thought Matters is broadcast, you can watch that show every Sunday morning. Here in Madison, it's Sunday night. For stations and times, check ffrf.org/ Free Thought Matters. Or go to our website and look for the show under the news dropdown.
Yeah, so we'll have to talk about all those. It's in New York, Chicago, Minneapolis, Sacramento, Los Angeles.
San Francisco.
I think it's Houston, is it? So if you live in a big city, you might be getting this unsermon on Sunday mornings. And there is a lot of news to report this week. And let's start out with the good news out of the November 8th elections. And that is that abortion won big in yesterday's elections, or in Tuesday's elections, and proving that abortion rights do retain popular support, not just by atheists and agnostics, but by the general public. And FFRF had sent action alerts to our members in many states who had referenda. The abortion access received solid support in ballot measures in California, Montana, Michigan, Kentucky, and Vermont. And notably, Michigan and California have enshrined abortion rights in their state constitutions. This is really big, really important. Also constitutional protection for abortion rights in Vermont. And then in Kentucky, in a close race, voters there rejected a ballot measure that would have denied any constitutional protections for abortion or abortion funding. And in Montana, Montanans, thank you, Montana, voted down a deceptive abortion ban law that would have criminalized health care providers and limited their care options. And so we are very glad to see that the public cares about individual liberties and reproductive rights.
And we care about it, especially at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, because the major opposition to abortion rights is
religion. And speaking of religion and views, American views, we are applauding a survey showing strong support for keeping religion out of government, but there are some caveats. There's a new Pew Research study that just came out, I think, last week. We did a press release about it. And in that survey, three-quarters of U.S. adults approve of the Johnson Amendment, and that was what our Ask an Atheist show was about, prohibiting churches and other houses of worship from endorsing political candidates. That's very good news. Over four-fifths of U.S. adults agree that the U.S. Supreme Court justices should not bring their own religious views into how they decide major cases. And that is very important, but here's the worrisome revelations from that Pew survey. They found that 6 in 10 American adults wrongly believe that the founders intended to create the United States as a Christian nation. And of course, we have a godless constitution, and that was very deliberate and revolutionary. And 45% of Americans think the U.S. should be a Christian nation. And more than half of those believe the Bible should have more influence on U.S. laws than the will of we the people.
Yeah, what part of the Bible?
This is shockingly un-American. And a plurality understood that the term Christian nation means the government would be guided by Christian beliefs and values. So very concerning to see. But this is why FFRF exists. We exist to counter this erroneous lie that the United States is a Christian nation, to uphold this bedrock principle of separating law from religious dogma. And so there's both good and bad news there. We just have a lot more educating to do.
And this year, the elections confirmed at this current election what happened even 2 years ago, that young people are showing up to vote. In the current election, young people showed up three times more than they had in the past.
And, of course, we are seeing up to 36% of young people identifying as secular, as none of the above, of unaffiliated. So that's very good news.
And FFRF cares about young people. We award scholarships to students, and we can announce now that FFRF has awarded $19,500 in the First in the Family Humanist Forward Freethought Scholarship to 6 students. They were selected by Black Skeptics Los Angeles, which is an African-American humanist atheist community-based organization. And the winners are Behanda Adonis, who's in the University of Massachusetts, Amherst, Ashton Hall, North Carolina, Luz Santos, University of California, Davis, Stephanie Avitia, UC Berkeley, Kaylin Nelson, University of Central Florida, and Belen Padilla of Scripps College. So congratulations.
We have to thank the underwriter of this, the sole underwriter of this, is our FFRF member, Lance Bredvold. And so he is contributing the money for this, $19,500. And these are selected by Black Skeptics Los Angeles, and it's a wonderful partnership.
Run by Sikivu Hutchinson.
Lance, yes.
We also have a relatively new essay contest for law students. And there were three winners of the Diane and Stephen Uhl essay competition for law school students, paying out a total of $9,000. The winners were James B. Aird, UW-Wisconsin Law School, Jacob Stock, the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law at Arizona State, and Jacob H. Larson, University of Virginia Law School.
And we're about to announce the new contest. I think the deadline is going to be sometime in March. So if you are a law student or know a free-thinking law student, please come back to our website, and we'll also announce this on Free Thought Radio that we're figuring out the topic, and it will be momentarily announced. And then we want to talk, save a little time at the end of this segment to talk about how we need a national and international outcry against this terrible act by the Iranian parliament on Tuesday to vote to execute the protesters. And, of course, you know that the country's been having daily protests since the horrible death on September 16th of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini, a young Kurdish woman who apparently didn't quite have her headscarf up as the moral police wanted, and she ended up dying from a head injury. And there have been 14,000 people detained since then. They've been out in the streets. Young women have been taking off their hijab. Some of them have been burning it. They've been crying out, woman, life, freedom. It's been very much a feminist protest, but men of all ages have been joining too. And already 300 people, including children and teenagers, have been believed to be killed in this security crackdown, and we can only imagine that Parliament intends to kill all the people in detention, and some people think it's almost 15,000. So we have issued a press release. We're trying to figure out the pressure point. You know, here's Iran. We don't have an embassy. The United Nations is a pressure point, and if you're a member, you'll be getting some kind of action alert from us. But we are pleased to note that the Freedom From Religion Foundation was already in the process of trying to help the protesters. We have wired funds to the Council for Ex-Muslims of Britain for the purchase of a major sound system that they can take out into the streets every day. Under the leadership of Miriam Namazi, the council has been holding daily protests in London. They had a big one also in Cologne, and planning a big one in Paris, and they need to be heard. So we're glad to be participating behind the scenes in that respect. In response to the parliament vote, journalist Masi Ali Nahad tweeted, 227 members of the 290-seat parliament in Iran have called on the judiciary to issue death sentences for people arrested during the ongoing uprising. They want to execute innocent protesters who chanted, woman, life, freedom. The world must stop this act of terror. And she is right. The world must stop this act of terror. And this is all the more reason why the United States must also counter this rising Christian nationalist movement, because Iran is an object lesson in why we must combat theocracy and what happens when you have a theocracy.
Because the patriarchal government in Iran is very, very religious. Not all Muslims are that extreme, but this government is a terrorist government. So we're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to hear a historical song on the 100th anniversary of its debut in New York City, written by Irving Berlin, which is a free thought song. And then after that, we're going to speak with the playwright Maren Gazzaniga, who wrote the play The Unbelieving, about clergy who no longer believe in God. And we'll also talk with the researcher Linda LaScola, upon whose interviews that play was based.
And of course, she's also a character in the play. This is like a documentary play that we just saw last week, and it's wonderful, and it's on through the 17th
of November.
So we'll be telling you how to catch it if you're in the New York City area.
We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
This is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I am Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and in a minute, we're going to talk about an off-Broadway play about non-believing clergy with the playwright and the woman featured in the play. But speaking of Broadway, this fall is the 100th anniversary of the debut of the Irving Berlin song, Pack Up Your Sins and Go to the Devil in Hades. Such a wonderful title, which first ran at the Music Box Theater in 1922. What play was it, Dan?
It was the Music Box Review. He had an annual review that he put on.
And
there.
This was one of the
yeah,
songs.
One of the skits or one of the songs.
And there was a woman dressed up as a red devil.
Dressed
right?
up as a devil because the church was censoring and outlawing worldly music, including jazz. Jazz was pretty new at the time. And Irving Berlin loved jazz, so he wrote this song with jazz players, and this woman in a devil suit comes out and is dispatching these jazz players down to hell as she sings this irreverent song about actually preferring hell over heaven. This is Irving Berlin's Pack Up Your Sins.
Message from below was from a man I used to know about a year or so ago. Before he departed, he is just as happy as can be. I'll tell you what he said to me. He said, if ever you get heavy hearted, pack up your sins and go to the devil in Hades. You'll meet the finest of gentlemen and the finest of ladies. They'd rather be down below than up above. Hades is full of thousands of Joneses and Browns, O'Houlihans, Cohens and Bradys. You'll hear a heavenly tune that went to the devil because the jazz band, they started picking it, then put a trick in it, a jazzy kick in it. They've got a couple of old reformers in heaven, making them go to bed at 11. Pack up your sins and go to the devil, and you'll never have to go to bed at all. If you care to dwell where the weather is hot, H-E-double-L is a wonderful spot. If you need a rest and you're all out of sorts, Hades is the best of the winter resorts. Paradise doesn't compare. All the nice people are there. They come there from everywhere just to revel with Mr. Devil. Nothing on his mind but a couple of horns. Satan is waiting with his jazz band. And his band came from Alabama with a melody hot. No one gives a damn if it's music or not. Satan's melody makes you want to dance forever, and you'll never have to go to bed at all. Your sins and go to the devil in Hades. You'll meet the finest of gentlemen and the finest of ladies. They'd rather be down below than up above. Hades is full of thousands of Joneses and Browns, O'Houlihans, Cohens and Bradys. You'll hear a heavenly tune that went to the devil because those jazz bands
They started picking it, they put a trick in it, a jazzy kick in it. They've got a couple of old reformers in heaven, making them go to bed at 11. Pack up your sins and go to the devil, and you'll never have to go to bed at all.
That was my co-host Dan Barker's wonderful version of Irving Berlin's Pack Up Your Sins and Go to the Devil in Hades. And you can find that on FFRS music CDs, which are also available on iTunes or wherever you get online music. And so coming up, we're going to be talking with two women who are part of the new off-Broadway play, The Unbelieving, and it is currently playing at 59E59. It's East 59th Street, called The Unbelieving. It's only going to be on through Saturday, November 19th. And so Linda Lascola and Marin Gazzaniga, who are creators of the new play, are going to be joining us to talk about the play about clergy who no longer believe in God.
So stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Last week, Annie Laurie and I were in New York City, in Manhattan, to see the new play, The Unbelieving. It's a play about clergy who no longer believe in God. Since I'm a former minister myself and a co-founder of The Clergy Project, which is briefly talked about during the play, I was invited to be a part of a talkback panel after the play with our two guests today. The Unbelieving, developed and performed by the civilians, is now running at the 59 East 59 Theater off-Broadway, just barely off-Broadway. It's based on interviews of clergy who no longer believe in God, conducted by Linda Lascola in cooperation with the philosopher and author Daniel C. Dennett, which became the basis for their book that they co-wrote called Caught in the Pulpit. Linda Lascola is a qualitative researcher, a clinical social worker, and a co-founder of the Clergy Project. So, Linda, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
And the playwright for The Unbelieving is the writer and producer Marin Gazzaniga, who is our other guest today. Marin Gazzaniga has been a journalist and now writes for theater, TV, and film. She's written for HBO, AMC, Lionsgate, Hulu, CBS, a host of others. She also works on the soap opera, The Young and Restless. She's written nonfiction books such as Maverick Mind and The Breast in an anthology. Her plays include So Close, in ways both frivolous and deep, and her newest, of course, The Unbelieving, which is the play we're talking about today and which was developed by the civilians. So, Marin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It was a wonderful play. We were so excited. We were so moved. And, of course, we know some of the people upon whom the play is based, including Linda Lascola herself. Linda, I want to ask you, when you first saw the play, which is a character acting your part. How did it feel to be watching yourself on a New York stage?
It feels very, very weird. It continues to feel weird. I'm getting used to her. She's very good. But it's the only thing I can explain to say, it's very strange, very weird to see someone playing you and to hear your words come out of their mouth. It's also wonderful because I love the fact that the clergy are getting so much attention because of this.
Speaking of words coming out of their mouths, all of those words, I understand, Marin, they were taken verbatim from the transcripts. So when the clergy were saying those lines, those were actually their own words. Isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct. They're in some cases edited or condensed, but yes, it's all the real words from both the transcripts, from a few additional interviews I did later on, and also I think some things are pieced together from emails between right. Linda and some of the clergy as they were having follow-up discussions.
So we
right, things that happened after the study.
Correct.
So we should briefly advertise that this play is only running now through Saturday, November 19th. So if you're in the New York City area, hurry over to see it at 59E59. You can go online to find The Unbelieving.
That's the address of the theater, 59 East 59th.
Yeah, and now I'm forgetting the website. Does one of you have the website there?
I believe it's also 59E59.org.
And you can just Google The Unbelieving Play. But for those who haven't seen it yet, Linda, could you just briefly talk about your interviews, what the play is about, how it came about, the interviews came about?
Right. The interviews came about because I was very curious about how clergy could continue to be clergy and not believe. Which is something that Dan Dennett had suggested in one of his books that I read at the time called Breaking the Spell, Religion is a Natural Phenomenon. He suggested that there were such clergy, that they should be studied the way Masterson Johnson had studied sex. And I thought, well, that is a wonderful idea, and he's right, it should be done. And then later on, he said the same thing in a Washington Post online article that he wrote. He said he thought there were many clergy out there who did not believe. So that prompted me to contact him because I was a qualitative researcher and I was curious and I knew I could do these interviews if I could only find the clergy. And he said he knew a few. And so I contacted him and that's really how it got started. Then Dan Barker got involved very early on because that some of these people had actually contacted you, Dan. Is that correct? I mean, they contacted
you. That's right,
you.
Yeah. In fact, some of them that are appearing in the play itself, I remember their phone calls.
Well, Adam Mann, yeah. who comes on the play first.
Yeah.
And he was so good, that actor really caught the real man, Carter Warden, comes up at the end.
He really did.
Yeah.
He really did.
So a fascinating subject. And, of course, you talked briefly about, in the play, the Clergy Project, which started with 52, now has more than 1,200 members. So Marin, how did you get the idea of turning this whole topic, this book or this whole topic, into
research.
A play?
The research, yes. Well, it was actually Dan Dennett who and his wife Susan who had the initial idea when he was
correct.
Working on the study to turn it into a play, because I think Dan felt when he was reading the transcripts that the drama of the stories really left off the page. Dan is a cognitive scientist and my father's a neuroscientist. And at some point they were discussing this and my father said, well, my daughter's a playwright. And so Dan and I were put in touch and I've worked as a journalist and my first play was based on interviews. And I had also recently written a play that was dealt with themes of science and faith. And so I'd sent Dan that material, and then Dan sent me Caught in the Pulpit. And I believe then Dan and Linda and I had a conversation and just talked about, like, I found the material fascinating, of course. And I think my pitch to them was that I felt like it would work best as a verbatim play, that it really was their real words that was where the drama was. And also that because it's such a sensitive topic that... being able to say these are their real words felt like an important point, and that we weren't making stuff up.
So you must come from a smart family. Your father is Michael Gazzaniga, is that right?
Yes.
I have a lot of his books. We have some of his books in our library here, The Neuroscientist, and no wonder he and Dan Dennett are good friends. So,
And so, Linda, you and Dan Dennett are officially, I think, co-producers?
Yes.
And so you must have agreed this is a good way to go to actually depict the interview and the real words. Is that right?
Well, actually, I trusted Dan Dennett. I figured if he thought that this could be a play, then maybe he was right. And I essentially went along with whatever he wanted to do, as long as he did all the work. And he did the work of finding a playwright and finding money to put the play together, which I could never have done on my own. It takes a lot of financial backing to do a play. He found the executive producer, Megan Kingery, who I think you've also interviewed on your show.
On our TV show, that's right.
Right, to help put all of this together. And I went along for the ride, and it's turned out to be a good ride.
Well, Maren, I have a question before we go for a break, which is how many pages and pages did you have to go through? You were looking at the transcripts, right, of all of these interviews?
Yes, the study had ended up with about 30 people, I believe. And when we embarked on the play, Linda went back to those original participants and said, would you be interested or willing to have this playwright consider your material for the play? And 19 of those people agreed. So I had access to 19 transcripts, which I think probably totaled, I have stacks of them here in my office still, I think totaled, over thousands of pages.
Wow.
In total.
So you had to get permission first from all of the people who were interviewed.
Right.
And then
not all of those people, not all of those people ended up in the play, but I read through all that material and then had to, it was a very difficult weaning down process to sort of figure out who to highlight and how to piece this together.
Well, we also knew in the play the man who's the Apostolic Church, Jerry DeWitt is his real name.
Oh, the Pentecostal,
name.
Yeah.
I think he's called Johnny in the
Johnny,
play.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you get to talk to any of them in person?
I spoke directly. I had an email exchange with Johnny Berry, but fairly late in the process. I spoke to Carter, who is Adam. In fact, I was actually at his coming out down in Pittsburgh at the convention there.
Oh, at our convention.
Oh, you were
Yes.
Oh, you were there.
I was there. I attended it, and I was there, met him in person for the first time, and then interviewed him the next day, sort of how he was feeling afterwards, which was obviously, as you know, a very intense experience.
Well, so you end the play the way he started his talk. He came up and said, "My name is Carter Warden, and I'm an atheist." And the play ends that way.
Spoiler.
Well, everybody knows really. It's about the unbelievers.
Sorry.
Scratch that.
Well, still, we were struck with that when the play ended.
I wanted to
say... Well, because I will say that an interesting thing about Adam in, when I began this project, it was early, the book had just sort of recently been published, so he was still very much in process and in his struggle. I think the Clergy Project had somewhat recently launched, but it was years before, as you know, years before he made that speech at the convention. So mm-hmm. I was able to see, to be part of that journey or witness that journey. And at that point it became, the play was already fairly well on its way at that point. But when I attended that, I was like, well, this just feels like the ending, this feels like the arc.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. And you got some of his musical bent in there too, in the play.
Yeah.
Yes.
We also know the Catholic nun. You had a Church of Christ minister, a Jewish rabbi, a a Muslim imam from the Ivory Coast. And by the way, the night we were at the play, that actual imam, former imam, was in the audience.
The afternoon we were at the play, yeah.
And the
Muhammad.
And when the character got up and said his line, if I go back and tell my father that I'm...
You're giving it away.
Oh, okay. Then I won't say it. But when he said the line, which I won't say here, and Muhammad just laughed really loud.
He shook his laughter. He was sitting right in front of us. He was struck with having somebody portray him.
Saying
on
his
page.
Own lines in it.
Yeah.
There's also an Episcopalian, a Seventh-day Adventist, a Mormon, and a Pentecostal. So we have to take a break here. We're talking with Maren Gazzaniga, playwright of the new play, The Unbelieving, and with the qualitative researcher, Linda Lascola, on whose interviews and transcripts the play was based. So I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're listening to a little bit of Aaron Copland, a non-believer whose birthday is this week. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are talking about the new off-Broadway play called The Unbelieving that is now playing at 59 E59, the theater almost on Broadway in Manhattan, only playing through Saturday, November 19th. And we are talking with the two women who are instrumental in this play, Linda Lascola, who is portrayed in the play as the qualitative researcher interviewing members of the clergy who no longer believe in God, and Maren Gazzaniga, who turned her Linda Lascola's interviews and research into the play. And it's been a thrill talking with both of you. And Maren, I have a question. How long did this take to write and to get produced and actually in the theater?
So it's been about 8 years since I first began talking to Dan and Linda about it, obviously not nonstop, but, you know, that was time where I would work on the script. I would informally have actors come read in my living room. Then we progressed to actually doing sort of table reads and staged readings with some audiences. And then I think it was about 4 years ago that Megan Kingery, the executive producer, got involved, and she connected us with The Civilians, which is an investigative theater company that's been around for about 20 years. They're quite a well-known company in New York City, and they are known for doing theater based on interviews and verbatim research that they do as a company and then turn into play. So Steve Cosson, who's the artistic director of that company, is the director of The Unbelieving. So it was a great match for us. They're expert at figuring out how to turn sort of real words into theatrical experiences, which I think he's done a great job.
And how many permutations did your play go through?
I feel like we had about 4 or 5 sort of readings of it. But I mean, hundreds of permutations. I have so many drafts.
And right, right. You know, so do I. I mean, I've gone to at least 4 readings, and there've been many scripts than that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the interesting thing is I think some of the core material that is still in the play was there from the beginning, and the permutations have been about honing it down, picking the most dramatic material, how to juxtapose this material to sort of create a story and a theater piece. That's been some of the biggest challenge. We've had discussions about how much of Linda to have in the play and how little of Linda to have in the play. And I think what's pleasing to me is that I feel like the end result is really that it's the clergy story with Linda as our trusted guide. And, which is sort of something I've wanted all along. And it feels like that's where we ended up. And that feels like the right choice.
Well, she was a trusted guide. And you could see even her struggle, the actor was portraying, of maintaining objectivity as a qualitative researcher, but talking about these very personal issues with these clergy, many of them talking back to her. So that dynamic was very important, I think, during the play. Didn't you say that was the pandemic delayed it for a year or two?
Yes. Obviously, during COVID, theater completely shut down in New York, so we couldn't do anything in terms of developing the play at that time. So, yeah, there was sort of a two-year pause. Although I will say that during that time, I did some additional interviews, and that's when I interviewed Carolyn, the nun, and Mohammed and Dennis. So I was able to do some script work during that time, but we were not doing any active play development.
You know, we know Carolyn, actually her name is Maureen, and Mohammed. They are actually on the board currently on the board of the Clergy Project. And it's a good thing you didn't jump in right now, Marin, or you would have had 1,200 stories to read through. And some of them are very dramatic, and many of them have written books and articles. And
Jerry DeWitt has written a book.
Yeah,
about
Jerry DeWitt, Hope After Faith. Yeah, so, and people who might be interested in going further can visit clergyproject.org to read a lot of their stories.
So I was going to ask you, Linda, when you were watching this permutation, all the different versions of it, did you have any strong feelings about what needed to be in there?
Not so much what needed to be in there, but of course, seeing yourself portrayed on stage, as I said before, is weird, but you also wanted to come across well. You want to come across as a nice person, which I am, you know.
Which you are.
When all is said and done, I'm sort of a nice person. And there was just one case where, at the reading, the actress did not come across as a nice person. And the interesting thing to me is it was the words that were coming out of my mouth. It was absolutely my words, but it was the way they were said that didn't come across well. And we fixed that. And it's still all my own words. But I think I come across as a nice person now, which is the important thing.
Yeah, well, you
and
come...
somebody would want to talk to.
Yes. Huh. You come across as a very, gentle researcher who's genuinely curious. And in some of these interviews, it's portrayed as people who you had trouble drawing some of them out at first.
Absolutely. They were people, it was interesting, they were willing to talk. But this happens a lot. I also have a background as a clinical social worker. This happens a lot. People really want to talk, but they don't have the words to express themselves, or they're hiding something that they don't want to speak about at that moment. And it's the interviewer's job then to bring it out. And so Marin was very clever at picking out some of those parts where I tried to do that sometimes successfully and sometimes not successfully, but always in an interesting way that sometimes was humorous. So there's humor in the play as well, which I want people to know.
One of the reviews of the play, one of the critics who liked the play, called it a probing play. And that's what the character was doing. You were gentle, but you were also probing gently to get them to tell their stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, you had to.
Marin, you must be very pleased after 8 years to see your play on off-Broadway.
Oh, yes, it's thrilling. And it's odd. I was saying to people that after being in the room, like my office and other, you know, rehearsal rooms with it for so long, to now have it up and running and not be there every night is a strange experience. That it's going on without me.
Well, Well, thank you. Thank you, Maren Gazzaniga, the playwright of The Unbelieving, for being with us today. And you, Linda LaScola, the qualitative researcher upon whose work the play was based. Thank you for being with us today on Free Thought Radio.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
And remember, the play is running through Saturday only, November 19th. So if you're in the area, get your tickets now for The Unbelieving at 59E59.
And that's our show for today. Our show is recorded in the Stephen Old Friendly Atheist Studio in Madison, Wisconsin. We want to greet listeners in Philadelphia to WOOM, Bryn Mawr to WZML in Madison, Wisconsin to WIDE and WMUU, Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, Bryan, Texas, KEOS, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, Vermont, New Hampshire, WOOL, Kingston, Rhode Island, WRIU, Ithaca, New York, WRFI. And if you're listening to us on the podcast, give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider and tell your friends and family to learn more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And to find out about the new podcast, We Dissent, featuring female attorneys working for state church separation, including FFRF, ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021, 335-4021, and support Free Thought Radio and FFRF's important work. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday